everybody. Welcome back to Core. That's right. It's Core, talking about video games, the industry, the games we play, everything in between. For those watching live, Bo's got a strobe light thing going. What? It's not that. That's not what it's called. Crystal dance
it's
ball.
It's like a disco light.
Disco
it's ball. It's a light bulb, but it's a disco ball thing.
Yeah. It brings us all back to a time where all of us were either too young or not alive yet.
It reminds me of those like 14-year-old dances you go to where they have all the smoke and they're playing that Guns N' Roses song, November Rain, and you're like dancing with someone, but you're not sure what you're doing. And
yeah, you know. Those were good times.
And it's like, cold November Rain.
Yep. For me, it was Forever Young by Alphaville. That was the one. That's what I see when I see your lights flashing. Yeah. And I see everybody dancing slowly to Alphaville's Forever Young. You know the one? You know the song. I want to be forever young.
They use that in movies a lot, I feel.
They do.
Like that must be a commonality because I see that a lot in movies.
In fact, so if you guys want to know what it felt like for me to be in high school, like exactly, go watch Gross Point Blank again. That whole movie is about somebody who graduated the year I graduated and is going back for their 10-year anniversary or the 10-year reunion at the same 10-year I would have had. And when John Cusack gets to the high school for the reunion, they're playing music from their time. When he walks in there, that's high school right there. Like they captured it. It's so hardcore. And I'm pretty sure Forever Young is playing at some point in that movie. But I might be confusing that with Napoleon Dynamite, which also used it at a dance. So
yeah.
It's entirely possible I've conflated those, but the point is...
Well, not to mention the time that they killed somebody using only a microwave.
Right. And that
there's also that.
No, that was a TV. You mean the grocer killing when he killed
Was it a TV?
It was a TV.
I thought he set something in a microwave and it blew everything up.
Oh, maybe that's at the convenience store where they had a Doom arcade machine.
Oh,
it was fake. It's not real. They never made one, but there's an arcade machine in there that says Doom on the banner, and there's a kid with headphones playing Doom, original Doom, while Cusack and the hitman are having like a fight inside of this 7-Eleven thing. And the way he wins is putting explosive something in the, I want to go watch that movie like right now. I love that movie so much.
I haven't seen it. Maybe I should watch it.
Oh, it's so good. Let me tell you this. I'll say this. You'll never see, in my humble opinion, and this is a hard thing to say because there's a lot of things I like him in, but I have never seen anything I like Dan Aykroyd in more than this.
Oh, Dan Aykroyd's awesome. So
great. He plays a rival hitman called Grocer. And he's crazy. He's so good. You'll walk away. I'm promising you this right now. You have my sincerest guaranteed promise that you're going to enjoy Gross Point Blank.
I'm
going to
make a note of it in my calendar.
Okay. Imagine John Hughes, like, you know, Breakfast Club.
A John Hughes movie?
No, but imagine that that kind of filmmaking. Mashed with the way Tarantino might make a movie. That's what this is. It's so good.
Yeah. It's so like good. A John Hughes movie, but people kill each other in
I'd love it. I just love that movie so much. And you got so John weird. You got John and Joan Cusack in the same movie, which is always fun to see siblings hanging out. Anyway, 1997's fantastic film.
Sold.
Gross Point Blank, which has nothing to do with video games except for that Doom machine. So we're going to get right to it. All right. I got caffeine in me and I'm excited. So we're going to talk about a thing right before I went out on vacation last week, which is why we didn't have a show. Sorry, everybody who missed the show or missed us or whatever. We missed you. I missed you all. I really did. These guys all played Jackbox games and made me jealous. But I was at a getaway with my wife, and that was also nice, which is also something worthy of jealousy. And anyway, we had a lot of fun, and it was great. But the whole while, there was a little piece of me that was going, oh, man, your brand new Xbox Series X is just sitting under your TV, not being used right now. Like, you got it. You had it for a day, and then you left town. And then you're not going to get to see this thing for 7 days. But since then, I got back, and I played it a ton. John got his Xbox Series X, and we discussed that a little bit on our previous episode, and you had barely gotten it then. So now we've got some time, right? A little bit of time has passed, gotten our feet wet, kind of trying to understand Microsoft's ecosystem, what their plans are for that thing, what's available now, what's coming, blah, blah, blah. And I have to say, Now, I know a lot of people just say this because they buy a thing and they automatically like the thing they bought quite often. There's a bias there. But I really like this device. It's solid. Like the actual device itself is a really well-made industrial design device and doesn't feel like flimsy plastic or something that will overheat or any of that stuff. It feels like a quality, well-made thing. And it sits perfectly right where I want it to sit. It's not nearly as big as everybody says. We've talked about all that stuff, so we can get past that and just get right to the experience of playing it. I have to say, after spending some time kind of bouncing around Game Pass and just trying to decide what to play and everything, I am blown away, utterly, completely blown away. And remember, I played this on PC with you guys and it looked great then. I am blown away with how good Gears 5 looks on this thing. And maybe it's because I'm running this on a UHD capable television at 120 hertz. But also they put out a version of the game for the X as part of Game Pass that is not revamped, but up-resed, up-gauged, up-whatever, better textures for the device. So for the new console. And it incorporates some ray tracing as well. And I am telling you, I've never seen a better looking video game in my life. And it's just Gears. I mean, I understand, like, I'm not talking about the tone of the story or the, you know, everyone's got big armor and everyone's all tough or whatever. Like, that's just Gears. But Gears 5 in Unreal Engine 5, I think they're using 5, looks insane. It looks insane. It is so pretty and moves so nicely. Running at 4K, running at 60 frames plus per frames per second, no problem, no slowdown, no chug, nothing. It's crazy to me how good that game looks in that format. And again, you know, when you and the three of us were playing this a bit on PC a while back, like a year ago when it came out, and it looked good there. No qualms or whatever. This just looks a lot better. And I don't know why. I've looked at it. I've come back on here on PC and I don't see, it looks good on PC still, but it looks great over there. Now it's a first party game. You know, they get to tweak their own stuff any way they want to. You know, third party games may vary in terms of their quality or their frame rates or whatever, but it blew my mind. So that was my big, one of my big takes on this thing was how amazing Gears 5 looks. And again, it's a TV with UHD and, you know, OLED and blah, 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 like a really nice TV that makes everything look super nice, really good blacks and all that. And so, you know, I don't know, some of that's at play, but very impressed. I also will say that I haven't watched like a physical media disc in a long time. So I decided to put, guess what movie in there, John, if you had to guess, what did I put in there?
Mad Max Fury Road.
Damn straight. Mm-hmm. First thing I did, took black and chrome, except I did the color version, put it in. Because it's a two disc set. You get two. It comes on the same thing. Sorry, it's confusing. Okay. I don't know why
I understood it, it eventually, but it was like, decided to watch Empire Strikes Back. It ended up being Return of the Jedi, but put in, you know, Empire Strikes Back.
No, this was like the full, the version I have on Blu-ray is they have the black and white, black and chrome thing that they did, version of the movie, the edit of that movie, and then they have the color one on the other disc. So I don't know why I brought that up, but I watched Mad Max Fury Road and it's full glory and it looks insane and played great and no problems there. So, and it didn't overheat and there's no fan going, the whole time you're trying to play.
I hate that.
I hate it too.
You did an impression of my actual computer.
Yeah.
That's what my PS4 sounds like after about 5 minutes. It's just all of a sudden it's like, are there jets flying overhead? Yep. What's going on over here?
Yeah, I had the same thing with my one of the 360 models I had. It was really loud. One and the PS3 was really loud. My PS3 sounded like a freaking plane taking off. This is just dead quiet. I hear similar things about PS5. Nice, quiet new consoles. I like that a lot. Anyway, blown away by that. So then I thought, well, what other stuff in here is like Series X and S ready? Like what have they done first or third party here to get us going? And I remembered, oh yeah, No Man's Sky is supposed to be all upgraded and stuff. I don't know if the PC version is yet.
They did. Okay. So if you are on ultra settings on the PC, you are seeing the up-resed for next-gen consoles version of the game.
Okay, very cool. That's good to hear. When did they do that? Is that in the last couple of days and I just missed it or something? Or
that was, that was the launch day for the Series X. Oh. They launched simultaneously.
All right, I missed all that. Well, I'm glad I checked it out because that looks amazing. I'm sure it looks just as good on a maxed-out PC as well. I haven't tried it there since the changes, but looks beautiful, runs great, just milky, smooth frame rate. I'm probably going to sit on the couch and play a lot of that game again. Here's the other nice thing. That game doesn't depend so much on your progress. Like it's fun to do new runs in it. Because everything's kind of new every time, you know, new planets, new systems, new whatever. So it doesn't bother me at all to not have a shared save on that. Cause I have it on Steam and I have progress on a save or two, but I don't care. Like I'm not precious about that save the way I would be an RPG or something. So hopping in on the couch and just playing No Man's Sky feels great. It's rad. And it comes with Game Pass right now. So it's not costing me anything extra to play it. So anyway, loving that. That looked great. The other big jump out for me was Gears Tactics is very fun on the console. Very fun couch XCOM-y turn-based stuff happening there. Again, was already on PC, but here it is there. Looks good. They added... again, some features that the console takes advantage of, including frame rate, resolution, and ray tracing. So that's all looking good. And then the other big surprise for me was a game that was originally for VR. It debuted on PlayStation VR and then eventually ended up on PCs. Epic Game Store had it first. I think it's in other places now. But Tetris Effect has been a pretty big hit since it first landed in 2019 or 18, whatever it was. And... my problem with that game was never that I didn't want to play it or any other issues. I just didn't want to always have a headset on to play it. And this version that they made called Tetris Effect Connected, which I believe is exclusive, at least for now, to the Xbox Series X and S, is great. It's just great, dude. Giant, freaking loud, cool, badass Tetris business going on. And now it's two-player. Whee! So I can play with my wife and have her get mad at me. So there's that.
I love Tetris Effect. That game was phenomenal.
So good.
I really loved it. Music was great. Visuals were great. That was a fantastic, just chill on the couch game.
Well, the good news is this brand new version with the two-player mode and the fully intact single-player mode is just as nice. And again, on a giant screen with your butt on the couch, it's a slice of heaven. I also synced an Xbox One controller to the device, so I've got two controllers going, and it's seamless, no problem, works great. I mean, there's differences in the controller, but if you're playing with somebody in co-op or doing something else, it's no big deal. Like, their D-pad's slightly different, and there's no share button on the older controller, but other than that, it's pretty much kind of a similar experience. So, really enjoyed all of that. But yeah, my experience so far with the X is pretty strong. I don't really have an exclusive to talk about because there isn't one at launch that's significant. I mean, other than stuff that like Gears was an exclusive console launch for this console, not the one at the time the PC version came out first, which is a little unusual. So there's that. But I don't know if that really counts.
There's a decent chance that a lot of people are in the same boat that I was in, which was, you know, maybe you were a big Xbox 360 person and then, you know, choosing between the Xbox One and the PS4, you went PS4 and now you're going back to Xbox with the Series X. And like all those Xbox One games, maybe those are all brand new to you. Yeah. If you didn't have a PC that could play it. And I think, Scott, would you agree with me on this? Because this is kind of what I said last week, and I feel even more strongly about it this week, which is, yeah, there's no console-exclusive game, but I don't know if I've ever had a new console that I booted up and just went, oh my gosh, what am I going to play? I got so much I could play. Like, I just felt like I instantly had this insanely huge library instead of, well, I'm going to play one of the two games I got with the console, and that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, that's a marked difference this time around, which is, again, my main motivator for even getting it was this is, I believe, if not the future of gaming, this model. I mean, I'm not saying Microsoft alone. Sony could easily adopt this model moving forward, but this model of gaming is the future. And if not, everyone else's future. It's definitely mine. It's like how I like to play. I don't want to. I love to sit down to a new game and play it and beat the hell out of it. I'm doing that with Valhalla right now on PC. I love it. Blah, blah, blah. But I don't. Most of the time, what I like to do is go, I'm in the mood for something. And Tetris is going to scratch that itch right now. Or I'm not in the mood for that. I want to go play multiplayer shooters, which I did. I went and played Gears multiplayer for a while. By the way, there are still tons of people playing that game. And I did all right. I did okay there. We just played team deathmatch and stuff, but it was really fun. Anyway, I wouldn't mind playing more of that again. But the experience... Oh, this is the thing I want to speak to. The experience of logging into these games that I already had on Game Pass on PC and been playing for 10 months or whatever, in some cases, when I got in and chose my profile, which is just a, you know, a single A button click away, all the saves just are there. Like, it just says, oh, okay, we see you've played this. Sync, done. That's a little like playing on multiple Steam machines, I guess. And yeah, it's so simple. I didn't have to think about it. I don't have to copy anything weird. Don't have to do anything weird at all. It just works, and I really appreciate that. And all that stuff's very snappy. There's no real waiting for that sort of thing. All this quick resume stuff's working really well, including those EA games on EA Play. I fired up your Lost Jedi Monkey Boy Redhead Man Saves the World game.
Uh-huh. What's that was called? It. Weird that you remembered that title. Final, I have to think about it.
Final Judgment of the Jedi. Jedi's Final Day. What is it?
Jedi Fallen Order.
Jedi Fallen Order. So I'm playing Jedi Fallen Order, and even those games, I'm pausing, going back to the main menu, playing something else, and then saying, all right, I'm going to go back to Jedi game, and it just resumes right where I was, and it's nearly immediately, and it's as if I never left. That kind of stuff's working out really great. By the way, that game looks insane. I also downloaded 3 sports games because sometimes I like those. So I'm playing a little bit of hockey, NHL 20. I'm playing, or I guess it's, yeah, NHL 20. I'm playing a little FIFA 20. 21's not out yet for this console. And, oh, I downloaded Madden, but I haven't tried it yet. But once in a while, I like just a sports game. And those look really great. Again, those are, you know, known quantities, and they're on other consoles and other stuff. But it's, John's right. The sheer choice of, like, holy crap, I've just walked into a library and I can pull off the shelf whatever I'm in the mood for.
And, literally an arcade.
Yeah, kind of. And I'm paying $15 to get into that arcade, but not every visit, every month. That's pretty damned affordable.
Yeah. And it's like, it's not, unless you were rich enough when you got your console to, like, buy 10 or 15 games for some reason. It's never been the case. I always get one or two. It's a really great feeling just to have all these options and to try them all. I realize the subscription has been around before, but this is the first time something's launched where you have, you know how you're worried? I think we mentioned it before that Xbox didn't have a flagship launch and that was going to be a problem. Like PlayStation seems to.
Right.
Doesn't feel like a problem anymore. Does it?
Doesn't feel like a problem to me. No. In fact, if anything, like suddenly Gears 5 feels like a brand new video game that I just bought. It feels that new and that interesting. And even though that thing moved over my saves, I'm like, I'm going to go fresh through this campaign. I'm just going to relive the whole thing.
I want to play Spider-Man Miles Morales.
Of course.
I do. I haven't purchased it on the PS4. They're not doing the thing where if you buy it on the old generation, you get it on the new generation. So that's a little unfortunate, you know, in my opinion. But if I absolutely can't wait any longer, I'll get it on the PS4. I do want to play it. It's certainly appealing, but like, that was the deciding factor for the console for me, is I wouldn't trade all this other stuff I'm getting for that at this point.
At this one, you know, point, yeah.
I get maybe it. Down the line, yes. You know, there's certainly games coming out on PS5 I'm excited about. The controller sounds awesome. Everybody I know who got the PS5, I'm not seeing a lot of buyer's remorse, although I did see one very specific example in our Discord of someone saying there's crapped out on them. But that seems to be an outlier,
There's a couple of cases. This happens almost with any kind of like electronics revision. You know, you always hear the stories about somebody bricking something or a hard drive break or whatever. And there have been some anecdotal stuff with PS5 where, who was it? Jeff Gerstmann, I guess, is on his third. So that's a high profile one. And he worked directly with Sony to get the replacements because they were like anxious to have high profile guy not have broken PlayStation 5s, and yet the second one crapped, and I think he's on the third. I think I have that right. But anyway, you know, I don't think this is Red Ring of Death level, not even close to that. It's probably closer to what I have with my PS1. My first PS1 died after 4 hours of use back in 96 or 7. And I had to take it back to the mall and get another one. And then it was fine for the duration of the generation. So, John, you're right. It's, you know, outliers be damned. I haven't heard a lot of complaints about any of that stuff on the Microsoft side, though. That seems like there's a pretty strong consensus that this thing is pretty industrial. Like, it's built like a truck for a reason. And I personally appreciate that because it just feels like it's not going to break. But yeah, you're right. Like, I want to play Miles Morales. I want to play the eventual God of War follow-up. I want to play these exclusive games that are only going to be there. In theory, maybe they will loosen their PC strings up a little bit. I don't know. There's a lot of talk about that. But I think there's going to be an already enormous pressure on Sony to find an answer to the value proposition. In the chat room, I said proposition again, so go ahead and take a drink. Everyone says they have to drink when I say proposition. So I'm going to say proposition, 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 proposition. Now you're all drunk. You're welcome.
Good and sloshed.
Yeah, you're all stoned now because of me. But anyway, they want to provide that same kind of value in some way. It's got to be more than PS Plus. It just has to be more than that. That thing is not enough. I mean, Microsoft's already got an equivalent with the Games for Gold thing. That's basically Plus, and it's included in Game Pass. Plus EA Play, plus all these games, plus the 360 backlog. Like, all of these games, plus third-party games, it's really hard to say that if Sony doesn't eventually have an answer for that, that's bad for them. I really truly believe that. If they do find an answer for it and it's equivalent to the point of swaying people, then that's huge for Sony because you've got that plus these amazing exclusives. Microsoft's aiming to be the place full of exclusives, and they're making acquisitions and buying up developers and building out games to do that. But that stuff's not there. They're basically where Sony was early in the PS3 cycle, where they were trying to build that stuff out and buying new studios and establishing what would become basically the story of the PS4's success, which was huge, successful, you know, standalone games that only you could get on that platform. So I think there's big pressure on Sony, and I hope they respond to it in the best possible ways for gamers so that I do want to end up with that console as well. Because right now, I just, like you said, right now, getting all that it gives me for $15 a month versus what I'd have to get out of two games, $70 a piece, it's just no comparison. Like, it's not even close to me. So, and this is somebody who did not invest in the Microsoft or in the Xbox ecosystem, not even once during the last generation. I never bought an Xbox One. The closest I got was an Xbox One controller for my PC. And that's as close as I got because there's, you know, high compatibility with that thing. And I thought it would be a good thing to have. And it was. But I didn't buy into their previous thing. Their plans sucked, in my opinion. And Sony's just was better. I think Microsoft is hungry now. We've talked about it a million times. And to me, the two sales pitches aren't even comparable again at this stage. Give it some time. Maybe that'll change.
Price is right. And the quality of games are there too, right?
Yeah. And that's the other thing. I didn't even talk, you know, like I just got the console, you know, raw. I raw dogged it. whereas John did the, John, you're doing the monthly thing, right? The pay it down for 2 years thing.
Pay, I think it's $35 a month, and that pays for my Series X, but it also pays for my Game Pass. So,
right. So that's all that's included in the cost. And by the end, you're going to spend $60 less than I did overall, which is crazy they even did that with no interest. But those are valuable. It's a valuable thing that they presented, and I just don't know how you compete with that just yet, except on the strength and on the back of a really strong first party history at Sony. And so this is so interesting, isn't it? This is going to be so much fun to watch the next 8 years or so.
Well, it makes me wonder what else they got up their sleeve, because it seems to me this reads as a strategy that the biggest goal is not to make a ton of money or to have the best games, although they're doing all of that. It's to get the boxes in as many households globally as possible. Mm-hmm. And they're basically giving it away. Like, you know, with the $35 a month. And, you know, yes, you're paying a little more for the box this time around, but paying a sub to get the games is not expensive. You just got to get over that one hurdle of buying it and you're done.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
You know, it's super great. And that's a great pitch for parents. They don't want to have the hassle of knowing which games to buy. Here's your Xbox. There you go. We'll pay the subscription. Here's a year of subscription. Done, you know, or get shovel the laneway and I'll pay you an allowance that'll, you know, pay for your subscription kind of thing.
Well, there's some concern that I've ruined my nephew's life. And let me tell you how I did it. So Kim's sister.
Well, that's just taking a turn.
Kim, that sounds like it came out of nowhere, but I promise it's related. Kim's sister came to Kim and said, "Hey, the boy wants a PlayStation 5 and we can't find one anywhere. Does Scott know anything about how we can get one?" And so Kim comes to me and says, "Hey, Sarah wants to know this." And I said, "Oh, well, has she considered an Xbox? Not that it will help her find one, because they're also extremely hard to find. As far as I know, just as hard. But have you talked to her about what that thing is and how it'll work?" She goes, "Well, I don't really even know." And I said, "Well, tell her this." And I just laid out some simple stuff like, if you get the PlayStation, which he really wants, because that's what he's had, right? So he doesn't know any better. Then she's going to buy the console for $500. She's going to buy Miles Morales for another $70. She's going to buy Bug Snacks or something else for another $70. Uh-huh. And then I said, or she's going to either spend $500 and then just $15 a month, and then there's a million games for him to play. Or she's going to buy this whole thing that I just told her about, but do it at $25 a month or $35 a month, depending on the console. And that this many games are available. All the Microsoft first-party stuff will always be there. Third-party stuff comes in, stays for a real long time, and is discounted on the way out in case you want to keep it if they leave. Some of the third-party stuff is staying in perpetuity because they have deals with Microsoft. Like, I tried to explain this in a real simple way, as best I could, because it is a little complicated sounding if you're just used to buy machine, put in game, play game. You know what I mean? This is different than that. But she was like, "Oh, we're not getting a PlayStation. We're doing this."
Yeah.
"We're doing this." Oh, yeah.
And that, and it appealed to the parent.
Yeah.
That's where it was.
And here's the problem. I think he's probably going to be ticked because they saw the value. He's not going to see that. He's going to go,
yeah.
But then, see, this is the other thing.
I want to play Spider-Man. I don't care that I have 700 games. Where's my Spider-Man?
But 90% of what this kid does on there is play Fortnite with his friends. And so the other thing
Fortnite
I said
on
was,
there?
Yeah, and I said, Fortnite's on all of these. And Fortnite in particular is cross-platform. People on phones are playing against people on consoles, playing against people on PC. So it doesn't matter what he's playing it on. Mm-hmm. Except for, I guess, the built-in sort of friending ecosystems that each console is going to have on its own. But playing with your friends and against them is still, you know, 100% possible. And so, anyway, that's probably what they're going to do. If you're the one that's, like, not the gamer and you're just trying to make the best money choice, how could you deny this? Like, to me, that's just that simple math. It's going to be very simple math for a lot of people. I also think it will deliver on the games front, which is why I'm in on this thing. But just from a like grandma at the store standpoint, if they start to calculate it and go, "Now wait a minute, if I get him that one, that's going to cost me $600 just for one game, plus it's just a single controller. Over here I could get a monthly thing, maybe buy an extra controller, but I don't even have to walk out of here with games because there's like a million of them already. We're doing that." You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You can just see.
And everyone understands Netflix. So that's a quick, it's Netflix, but for video games. Like, "Oh, I get it. Lots of movies." You're like, yeah.
So if anything, Microsoft's like drafting on the Netflix model working and having worked for a decade and more, so that people are used to this model and they go, "Oh, also it's like Netflix." Like that's really benefiting them.
And Netflix is easy and wonderful to log in and browse movies for and right. all that stuff. So it's a good Netflix, and the services like it, I think, are well regarded overall throughout the world. So this is the move. This is a big power slam or whatever, power bomb. Like
power, you know,
Microsoft bomb. Basically power bombing Sony at this point. At
a
this
little bit. And honestly, it's almost all they could do. And we said this before, but what else are they going to do? That last generation was a wake-up call for them. and they had to do something drastic. If this feels drastic and calculated and smart and should work as a way to really revitalize and make things very competitive again without such a giant gap in leadership. But Sony doesn't go down without a fight. They will probably respond in kind. That's what's great. Competition breeds, you know, trying to get the customers the most happy. So I have no doubt that Sony will, you know, what this console generation probably looks different in 3 years from a lot of perspectives. I'll bet Sony has a whole new plan for how they can try to compete with this, again, this sort of Netflixy model thing.
Well, and you've already got Phil Spencer out there saying, yeah, Sony's PS5 controller is amazing, incredible. I love it. It's a game changer. Like, that's the terminology he's using. He's like, this is a game changer. He says it's on video game manufacturers to learn from what they did with this controller, because this is the future. Yeah. Like, and he's gushing about it. He's like, yeah, what they did pushed everything forward and we need to adapt. And I mean, he's not shy about it. He says, in much the same way our Game Pass has done. And, you know, he knows what to be proud of on his end, but he also can see the areas that other companies are going. Whether that means it's something that Microsoft adapts, maybe there's a new Series X controller that comes out at some point that takes some of this technology and puts it in it. Maybe there isn't, but, you know, it'll be very interesting to see what they learn from each other, because while they are still competing, they're competing in two completely different ways,
right,
which really changes the landscape as they go forward, because it's no longer just about, well, you have this game and we don't.
Right. And it does more firmly put all three big names in video games in a position that I think I like them in. I like them in their weird, niche spaces where they're strong and then doing well where they're strong. And the Switch and Nintendo, they don't care about the console wars. They care about people buying Nintendo products. And so that they're competing, if anything, almost against themselves, and they're off here doing their thing, and it's great. And they've never been more successful than they are right now. They're killing it. Sony, assuming that's what they keep doing, will rely on their first party stuff, which will be AAA top tier, top shelf content that will just necessitate people having to get that box. And Microsoft is investing in this whole other thing. So in a weird way, it's like the first time I can see these three very distinct entities instead of three boxes all fighting for the same money. They're now three boxes that you'd have a hard time turning down at least two of them, because this one's going to offer this amazing portable experience and, you know, Nintendo first party. And this one over here is going to be the Netflix of gaming. And this one over here is going to give me AAA adult driven games that never, you know, that are always amazing and top tier. Like, I like that they're all digging in their little space, and it's not just, okay, everybody, the same starting line. Okay. The same race. Okay. The same specs. Like, I like it when things are spread out a little bit. It's just more fun to be a part of that, I think. Anyway, Xbox Series X, it's a thing. Nobody has a PS5 here yet, so sorry, everybody.
Yeah, my mom's trying to get one, so I might get to play one at some point.
Oh, nice.
I don't know why she wants one so bad.
Yeah.
I think because she has the PS4, and so her logical next step is kind of what you said. I need a PS5 now.
Yeah.
Because I told her the value proposition, and she's like, well, we just want to play card games. I was like, well, you don't even need a new console to play card games. In fact, you don't even need a video game console to play card games. You could just get cards.
Yeah.
But she seems very set on a PS5, so...
Maybe she saw something she liked and it's only available on PS5.
I don't know.
Cribbage Unlimited or something like that.
Yeah, I didn't see any ads for card games that made her go, well, it has to be the PS5, but that's...
Well, what's her poison of choice? Is she a bridge player? Is it Canasta?
I don't know. She won't even say. I'm just like, well, what do you want to play? Card games. What, okay.
Hearts?
Do you need a console for that? But
Rummy?
Gin Rummy? Yeah, could be. I like gin, not the drink for that game. But yeah, like, you know, I would probably, obviously she's going to do whatever she's going to do, but it seems like you'd actually have potentially more card games available on the Xbox thing, because you're going to have the same marketplace choices for third-party stuff, right? And
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a weird thing. Getting a
it
brand
does
new
give me access to a PS5. So have argued with her, but I'm not, you know, I'm if she pushes back, I'm like, all right, well, you win.
You've argued, but you haven't argued. I understand.
Here's what you can do is you could actually swap it out. Is there card games on the Xbox?
Just switch the console when she's not paying attention.
Yeah, just bring the Xbox over, take the PlayStation, play your Miles Morales, and then switch it back. And
sure.
No one's the wiser.
I feel like I think that's a good idea.
Like, there was
that's
a weird smart. Update to the PlayStation. It had Xbox all over. What does that mean?
This controller feels weird. Yeah, this controller's shaped different. I love that idea. But you'll have to let us know how it goes. My daughter, similar thing. Her whole life is based on where can she play the next God of War, because this first new one blew her mind so much.
It was really, really good.
Just completely, like, just embraced everything about it. And so she's like, wherever the next one of those is, that's where I'm playing it. And so she doesn't care about anything else. So if my daughter ends up with a PS4, then that's how I'll cheat and sneak in whatever. But yeah. I still don't want to go spend $70 for their first party games. Like that. Now I'm spoiled. It annoys me. Because
I got to buy games? What is this world?
Well, because we're
going to buy games anymore.
I have a question. Is just how many games are available on the Xbox subscription that PlayStation is asking to play full price for?
Well, if you're talking all the first party stuff from Microsoft is on Game Pass. So that right there. So, for example, if you wanted to play Forza 7, which is their top end car simulation unit, you don't have to go buy that game for $70. But if you want to go play the new Gran Turismo when it comes out, you're going to pay $70 for that thing. Like, they don't have a model where their first-party games are a subscription-based access model. And having that be available to you in perpetuity as long as you're subscribed. Their Plus system right now is just, hey, there's a few games that we're going to give away for free every month. And it's a mix of, like, small third-party indie games. Sometimes a decent game will show up that's like pretty big, but they're always a couple years old. Like, it's not the same by any stretch. And then on the Game Pass side, it's not just Microsoft games that are at launch available. There are plenty of third-party games. I mean, how many times on the show have we said, oh, I really want that new Carrion indie game. I'm going to just pay $20 here on Steam. Wait a minute. Maybe it's on Game Pass. Oh, shit, it's on Game Pass. Like, it just happens all the time. So as long as they keep that up, and acquisitions like Bethesda and other stuff, it seems like it's going to be hard to deny the value again. The value. It's the value, man.
The value.
The value. I'm not going to say proposition. Oh, I just did.
Yep.
What are you going to do? Anyway, some good news, I think, in the news outside of all this. The Hitman people, the people that made the
Hit- Scott, I just got to say, don't let Dwight Schrute get under your skin.
Oh, he's
I want all the listeners to know he's worrying about what Dwight thinks.
Yeah, it is a little bit like
don't even do that.
The Dwight types we shouldn't worry about, should we? We really
love
shouldn't.
You, Dwight Schrute, but you know.
Do you really? You don't really. You don't love him.
Oh, I'm sure it's not really Dwight Schrute.
I mean, it's what we're all picturing, though.
Right. That's not the real Dwight Schrute. The real Dwight Schrute roots on TV.
Yeah. The real hero of The Office was Creed. So we can all agree on that. I love Creed. Sure. The Hitman developers, the people that made Hitman 1 and 2, these new Hitman games. They're amazing. They're fantastic games. They are making a James Bond game. How do we feel about this? John, do you want to play a James Bond game? And do you hope it includes throwing a fork across a kitchen to kill a guy? What do you hope there?
I have no idea what a James Bond game by them looks like. I just know that I'm excited for it.
Yeah.
Like, that's the Hitman games that they made are so perfect in walking that line of being self-serious and also ridiculously funny at the same time.
Yeah.
They nailed that tone and that sort of tongue-in-cheek. And I think James Bond will play strongly to that. So I don't know what they're going to make. I mean, the problem is, you know, as soon as you say we're making a James Bond game, people immediately think of GoldenEye. And if they tried to make GoldenEye, I don't think that's playing to their strengths. So, you know, I think you have to say like, hey, this is probably going to be a game in their wheelhouse. But, you know, you never know. I'm excited.
I kind of hope it is, more stealthy, creative sandbox stealth style. Like, if it's not more of that, then my opinion is that's a mistake, because that's their strength.
Yeah. Why do you go to them?
Right.
Yeah. Is the question. Why go to them if you want somebody to remake a first person shooter?
Right. You know? Same reason you go to Gluteus or Glamorous or whatever their names are that made Baldur's Gate 3. What are they called? Valerian. What is it?
Larian.
It's not Valerian. Like the steel.
This game is Valerian Steel.
Shit. I can't remember names today. But yeah, like those guys, you go to them because they know how to make turn-based, tabletop-influenced, amazing story-driven RPGs with great mechanics. That's why you didn't. So yes, in this case, you go to these guys because Hitman, the Hitman people know how to make a really great sandbox, figure it out, freaking stealth action game. It's the perfect combo if they play to those strengths. So I'm in. Here's the bigger question. Because those games always had a bunch of skins and clothes and all the weird shit you could do in them. Do these games feature the first run through the campaign is like, you know, you're Daniel Craig, but if you want later on, you can like put on your Pierce Brosnan skin or your freaking whatever. That'd be cool.
I mean, they got a lot of costumes they can pull from in that history. I don't know if they'll get actor likeness rights, but yeah.
That would be the way to do it.
You can have him dress up like a clown if you want to get your... I know it's Scott's favorite James Bond, but the lesser of the 007s in there.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I was going to say, isn't it be weird because James Bond is a spy that does no spying, pretty much?
I mean, well,
like
he tries.
He does. Yeah. You know what? That's a good point.
He's literally the worst spy. And
Hitman is a bald guy with a barcode on the back of his head. Yet for some reason, he puts on some overalls and people are like, come in. You know, we got to look out for this guy.
I haven't played Hitman, so I'm at a loss with this debate.
I like James Bond, but
he's a terrible spy.
Yeah.
Like, that's the joke. It's like, he literally explodes everything, sleeps with people he's not supposed to, drinks on the job.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not wrong.
That's true.
They give him a bunch of gadgets. He doesn't respect them or use them properly. Dangers people. He's the worst spy in the history of spies.
He takes Q's lunch and is like, what does this do, Q? And Q's like, that's my lunch.
Yeah,
that's funny every time.
He gets people killed all the time and then has to go on some redemption arc to, like, you know, do the thing. And yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're not wrong.
I like the James Bond movies, but that's like what you said about Hitman. And I'm like, I don't picture James Bond being very careful and sneaking up on someone and attacking them. I assume it all goes wrong and there's a huge action set piece like style. So that's where I'm just like, I'm wondering what they're going to, I'm very curious what they're coming up with.
Well, I never read any of those books by Ian Fleming, IP Freely. Jeez.
Famous author.
Didn't Ernest Hemingway guest write one of those?
Yeah, he loved the 00. But he was I've never read the book, so I couldn't really speak to maybe there's more of that in there. But Beau's right. I think you can do a lot though and bring out the spy bits.
If they lean into the joke that he's a terrible spy and part of the game is you try to be a spy and then screwing up as part of the game, because in most stealth games you're like, oh, I screwed up, got to start over, or I got to kill 5,000 guys. I don't know.
That's what you're describing is Hitman, like, because Hitman is this, like, you're a professional, you're the most lethal assassin in the universe, and then next thing you know, you're throwing fire extinguishers at guys' heads, dressing up like them, walking around as a cook, getting caught in the wrong place, running around, dumping bodies. And like, it's sort of about, it's starting off as a badass. Like, yeah, I'm friggin' John Wick. Here I go. And it's ending in, oh shit, 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 as you run through a building, just panicking and putting out fires that you've created.
In a chicken suit, usually, or something weird.
Dressed as usually a dumb mascot or something.
Yeah. See, I've never played a Hitman game. I've only ever seen the marketing and I've seen the ridiculous stuff, but I don't have a sense of just how Yakuza it is, basically.
Right. I think you would really enjoy those games. If those ever pop up on sale for a good deal or whatever.
Yeah, I should check them out.
Game Pass has the new one, I think. I think it does. I'm not sure.
It's one of those things where you get out of it what you put into it. Like, I could tell you about a Hitman kill where I infiltrated a church, and then I found a sniper rifle that I smuggled in, and I lured somebody out onto a patio, and then from across the way, I lined up the perfect shot and took him down. That sounds cool, and that sounds neat, but I can also tell you about the time that I dressed as the mascot for a local sports team and wandered through a party before making an exploding golf club blow through the top of a guy's head while he was out golfing, you know, just for fun. Like, you kind of decide your path, and it can be as ridiculous or as cool as you like.
Yeah.
Okay. So it is very sandbox.
Very sandbox. Okay. Yeah. But the sandbox is structured in, you know, like if you're at a party on a boat, like a yacht, and you're trying to kill some guy, whoever your mark is, the party is static. Like it's a boat, and there's only so many rooms, and it's, you know, stairs here and there or whatever. But the people are all milling around, and sometimes they move, and sometimes they're suspicious of you and others aren't. Some don't care. Some are drunk, whatever. Your job is to go in there and go assess that situation and then just come up with your own answer to solving the problem, which is I got to assassinate this guy and not get caught. And turns out that is a winning combo. It's a really fun thing to do, and they just let you go nuts. So I'll need that to happen here, or else what are they doing? Like, what's even the point? Yeah.
And it's a game where throwing things, whatever random objects you find on the ground, is better than pulling out your gun and using it. Like, if you're in a chase, it's better to throw pasta sauce at people's heads than it is to pull out your gun and start a gunfight. Like,
because it'll get everyone's attention and it's pretty much game over, right? I guess, right?
Well, he hits everybody in the head. If you lock on and you throw something, it's going to hit him in the head and it's going to knock him out. So you just pasta sauce. Pasta sauce, and you've got three people laid out on the floor.
Yeah, it's insane, that game, what you can do.
Mm. And sometimes playing this game, it sounds perfect.
Oh, you should. It's so good. But yeah, we'll see how that goes. That's coming soon. They said next year, I think. Marvel's Avengers. This is a game John owns. It's having a hard time.
Thanks for putting that in there.
No problem. It's not.
You know, are you Avenger shaming?
John paid money for this.
Look, this is no, you know, this is no $200 for a lifetime of Star Trek Online. But, you know, whatever. It's fine. Yeah. One of us needed to
play it one day.
Yeah. Who knows? But this thing dropped 96% of its player base in November. 96%.
Is it supposed to have a player base?
It did for
It's supposed to be Destiny. It's supposed to be
what? I didn't hear that detail.
Anthem. Oh. It's supposed to be those.
Supposed to be one of those.
They didn't market it that way at all, I don't think.
Well, all the early. That's a good question, because I feel like everything we ever heard from E3s and demos and stuff did sell it that way. But to the general public, I don't know what this was sold like.
I think it got sold as a single player campaign. I think Bo's right. Like, yeah. From the outside, if you weren't invested, it looked like a single player action game.
Yeah.
When they marketed like the first Destiny, it was like they showed you a level. Here's where people will drop in. Here's a world event. Here, you know, please know that this is an online game. It was, John, you're right, only single player stuff. I was like, yeah, some single player stuff with some replayability, just like they put it in other games. No big deal.
Yeah.
But if it's intended to be Anthem and Destiny, they messed up so bad. It's not surprising. I didn't even know that was the case.
Yeah.
And I watched a lot of the Avengers stuff. I was, you know, there's parts, times I thought it was cool. And
it's a looter shooter, but they didn't really sell it as that. You're right. They sold it mostly as a single player campaign. And they still have the Kate Bishop version of Hawkeye coming out. Which is what, December, this next month?
Yeah. She got delayed heavily to try and fix the game because there were so many problems and there were so many complaints and so many things they felt they needed to address. Kate Bishop got pushed back. She's still coming in December. But yeah, they had two stories recently, neither of them good. 96% of the PC player base, they were down by 96% in November. And they have confirmed they've yet to earn a profit on this game, which is also pretty bad for a game that's supposed to be ongoing and continued to have support. And this is kind of what my big complaint was with it, because I remember talking to you guys about it and saying, like, They got three supervillains in this game.
Yeah.
You got Abomination, you got Taskmaster, and you got MODOK. Like, you have the entire Marvel universe to play with, but they very clearly thought, guys, wait till you see what we add to this game. We're going to have so much cool stuff coming. It's going to be events. And, like, they were so busy looking into the future that they didn't focus on the here and now. And I still stand by, like, this game's going to get put on a ridiculous level of sale because of how poorly it's doing.
Yeah.
I think if you can get it at a discounted price, it's probably worth it. It has a pretty decent single-player campaign, but what you need to know is that you're buying it for that campaign. You are not buying it for an ongoing, persistent online thing, because once you hit max level and you're done with that campaign, what they offer is boring and it's bland and it's not compelling at all.
Mm.
Oh, is that true? The chat room says they pulled developers from Deus Ex to make that tripe. That's heartbreaking.
That is so heartbreaking. I love that. Well, I mean, that's not
a lot of investment into this game.
That's not super unusual, though, to have, you know, your studio and your publisher. If you've got sub studios, you'll mix and match a lot. So I don't think that's too crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's normal, but I like Deus Ex. All I want to hear from anyone anywhere is we're working on Deus Ex and we're committing as many resources as possible to Deus Ex.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear anything of the kind different. That's, you're already messing up if that's what you're doing. Sorry, that's just me.
I heard the rudest thing the other day. Somebody said that if you're looking to play a Marvel game this year and you want to play with friends, don't buy Marvel's Avengers, buy Lego Marvel's Avengers. That's a fun,
that's probably true.
You'll have a better time than you will with this thing, which I don't know if that's, I mean I can't totally jive with that idea. That seems a little over the top to me, but I understand what they mean.
Well, go ahead.
I was just going to say, people need to stop swinging for this magical, like, games as a service, ongoing, persistent world thing. Like, they just need to stop, because they don't dive in properly. They think about all the things they're going to do, and none of these games, I would even say Destiny's a weird outlier of a game that is popular despite itself. Because, Scott, I know we've joked about it before. That game is always $60, no matter how many times you buy it.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to play Destiny 2 right now, it costs you $60.
Yeah.
Do you already own it? Yes. Well, it's $60 if you want to play it. Like, it's just constant. And that game, every time they put out Destiny 1 and Destiny 2, is garbage. It's awful. And then they fix it in expansions, which costs $60.
Yeah.
And then they're like, here you go. Here's what the game should have been. I feel like it's an outlier, and I feel like, to put it in MMO terms, if Destiny is EverQuest, this sort of like weird thing that's become popular and has succeeded sometimes in spite of itself, unless you are coming to the table with World of Warcraft, do not try to make an MMO. It's going to be the exact same thing that happened during all those other MMOs. If you cannot surpass and evolve it into what it should be, stop trying.
Yeah.
Because it is a formula that does not work.
Yeah, I have a tendency to... I think I totally agree with that. By the way, don't try to go to the Game Awards website. It is a monster pig freaking horrible resource hog.
Oh, is that coming up again?
Yeah, the nominees were announced, and I went to go look at it so we could talk about it real quick.
That makes me so sad. It feels like yesterday we were doing the last one. Time's
so weird this year, but anyway, their site is a freaking resource hog. That one tab was like 80% of my system resources. It was horrible. Just make normal websites. I don't need a bunch of flashy shit. Literally, it had a loading screen. It had a loading screen with like a loading. Please wait.
It does. Yes.
Oh my god.
Oh, yeah, totally.
I went there despite your warning not to do it. I went there. So
it's
bad.
So. That's so bad. Somebody call Jeff Keighley and say, knock it off. Just do awards. It's fine. Anyway, so we're not going to look at those, it turns out. Chat room, you're going to have to wait to talk about it later, because someone thought it would be fun to have a 400 gigabyte website download all at once. All right. Hogger is coming to Heroes of the Storm. We like to mention the Heroes of the Storm stuff since that's our origin here on Core. And new character. And if I'm not incorrect, isn't this the first new character since...
May.
Not May the month.
May the little
Chinese lady.
Yeah.
Did May come out in May?
Yeah, I think they're on about 2 heroes a year now. Is okay. About the speed.
Which is what we thought that was the case, right?
May, it's a... No, never mind. It's Overwatch. That's wrong.
she came out 7 years
She was
ago.
A launched character.
Oh, here. Wow. Heroes of the Storm Wiki.
Yeah.
Hang on. I'll get the date. Oh, this is a great page.
Yeah.
May came out June 23rd, and then before that it was Deathwing December 3. And there were 4 heroes in 2019, and we're on track for 2 heroes in 2020. So okay. Work's definitely continuing to scale down on that game.
Yeah, seems like. But yeah. Hogger, the long-awaited, everyone's favorite dude to go farm and get mounts off of or whatever the hell we use. What do we do with Hogger these days? What do we do?
We just killed him. He was just a low-level experience alliance quest.
Well, wasn't there a thing where you log in as a level 1 gnome and then you get like 1,000 gnomes and you go try to beat raid Hogger with level 1
yeah,
gnomes?
Yeah, that was the thing. Yeah. I mean, he was fun. They made him a raid boss later. I mean, he had his place. I was a horde guy, so my Hogger experience is limited, but it essentially was one of the very first like group quests put in the game, and he was definitely turned up a little bit, and he killed many early adventurers, and he kind of became an early Warcraft meme, and now he is basically Taz the Tasmanian Devil in Heroes of the Storm.
Yep, and I hear his kit's fun. He's very mobile. Haven't tried it on the beta thing, but I'm curious about Hogger. So listen to ITN or Kyle talk about it because he seems to be pretty excited about Hogger. Okay. Well, that's it for news. Which means we got to do this now. So talked a lot about the games we've been playing on the Xbox, so we don't have to talk about those. But I do think we should discuss the 2 other big releases. One happened right before I left town. And then the other one happened this week. The one that happened before I left town was Valhalla, the latest edition of Assassin's Creed. We are all playing this game. And I'm here to say, having played almost every Assassin's Creed with the exception of 3 and... Oh, I didn't play the France one. Unity. But I played every other Assassin's
Creed. Nobody
did.
We were all warned away when that game burst into flames in front of our very eyes.
It had some issues, although some people really love it. If you get past all that or you play it now, I guess everything's fine now. But anyway, I'm a huge fan of the series. I think my favorite in this, there are 3 or 4 in the series that I just love: Black Flag, Syndicate, and the last 2, Origins, and most recently, Odyssey, are amazing games. And those in particular really changed and shifted what that game could be and is, moved it into a more RPG kind of space, got away from the Animus stuff a little bit more and more with each version. Everyone knows all this, so I'll just tell you what we think. I'll start by saying I think this is my favorite one ever. And that says a lot because I really liked the last 2. And I really like the characterizations in the last 2 and the stories in the last 2 and all of that. But there's something about the coming together of all of the systems they've sort of been tweaking out lately and having them come to what I think is just a really nice boil. Everything works really well together and it just feels great. It looks amazing on my PC. I'm weirdly tempted to get it on Xbox as well so I can share saves because that's a feature now. Of newer Ubisoft games, they will cross save over platforms so I could continue my progress on the couch and then play it on my PC when I want. I'm really tempted, but I haven't done it yet. I really like it, like a lot, and I can't wait to keep playing it. And I think about it all the time, and I want to play it right now, and it's fantastic. Bo?
Same.
Been a long time for you since, like, what, Brotherhood or something? Or the first one or something?
Assassin's Creed 2 was my last Assassin's Creed.
Okay.
And I've heard all about all the other ones, but I haven't actually played any of them. So it's interesting. It's an interesting experience to have liked the game then, but not liked it enough to really follow it, and then to play the game now and see how everything's gotten like super better.
Yeah.
it took a while for me to get used to the control scheme because Assassin's Creed has a specific set of controls that I didn't find intuitive. But once I got over it, I really liked them. Mm-hmm. And it's... It's fun, but almost not recognizable as Assassin's Creed. Like, my value proposition, if you will.
Oh, proposition.
Was that I would get to play... I like Vikings, and there isn't really a good Vikings game at all. That isn't, like, a science fiction thing. Like, this is, like... It's Vikings, like a TV show. It has cinematics like Viking shows, and it does all the Viking things right, and then it does its own unique spin on, you know, Ivar and Uba I've met so far, like the Ragnarssons, and I love it. And the part I dislike most is the Assassin's Creed part of the game. Like, yep. Honestly, yep. I'm like, I 100%. Get why they did it, and I understand it, and it's fine, but all that modern stuff, I wish I would, like, every time it comes up, I get super irritated. I skip the cinematics completely. And I don't play as an assassin. I literally have not sneaked around very much at all.
Oh, really?
There was a quest I just did where it's like some mercenary leader, and they're like, okay, well, you know, we got to go and see if we can't get in there and find some evidence and maybe, well, don't kill her, but maybe do kill her. And I was like, oh, I'm going to kill her. And as soon as the cutscene's done, I ran over the door, jumped on the other side, went, ah! And like shot an axe. And one guy shot an axe, ran up to the NPC and just killed her. And I had to jump on her and pound her face a whole bunch and then smash her head into the ground, which is my favorite move, by the way.
It's pretty good.
And then I'm like, I walk back and I was done, and I still haven't seen what the turn in is for that. I'm hoping they acknowledge how much of a badass that was, but I think they go, nice job sneaking around. And, you know,
well, here's the thing. So the game, it's funny you say that, because the last two games got away from stealth mechanics a bit and focused more on combat that was a little more akin to, I don't know, Witcher, Souls likes or things like that. Not nearly that in depth as a Souls game, but you know, you could parry and there were all kinds of breakers and left arm did this, right arm did that, that sort of stuff, especially in Origins. And then the last one, it was, you could stealth, but it's still, again, not a focus of the game. This one actually brought stealth back in a fairly major way, weirdly, because the game is about raiding camps and burning everything and being a Viking. And that's there, and I'm glad that that's there. But there are tons of stealth opportunities, which I love in these games. So for me, the return to stealth mechanics that are a little more akin to what they used to be, but also talenting my dude out to be very stealthy, is one of my favorite things about the new one. So that's really interesting, and that's my point about this balance. Go ahead.
I'm going to go even more interesting, because I'm going to go back around the world and say, I think this game's less stealthy. And maybe the fact that we are all sitting here disagreeing on how stealthy this game is a testament to how well it adapts to your playstyle. Because Odyssey, I played extremely stealthy. You didn't have to,
right?
But I did. This game, I have spent less time. I mean, I automatically, you guys know, I play rogues and stuff like that typically. So I will usually take stealth if it's presented to me. And this is the first time in a game in a long while that I've sat there and gone, maybe I should have gone down the combat tree. Because I am not sneaking around very often in this game. I am mostly just fighting directly and raiding and running into camps and just going, ah, I'm a Viking. And then having people attack me and fighting them. Like, I am definitely doing way less stealth in this game than I was in others. And I feel like the game encourages less stealth. So that's interesting, again, to hear you guys say two different things. Obviously, we're all having different experiences, which just says this game will let you play the way you want to play.
I agree. It lets you play. You get to organically sort of play the way you want to play it. And it may change throughout the game, or I don't know. You can also refund all those points and do whatever you want with those skills, which is good. They give you – if I had a complaint about the game, I really don't have very many at all. It's running great for me. I don't have any of the technical problems some people are reported. I'm just being just as smooth as any game's ever been for me. It's beautiful, freaking gorgeous game. If I had any complaint at all, it would be the skill system. They've decided to go with this big scattershot looking Path of Exile style branching, you know, thing. And it's all constellations, which is a big deal in Norse mythology and all that. So I understand why they're doing it the way they're doing it. If I had a complaint, though, that just feels overwhelming sometimes. Like, I don't know which one to choose. And really, none of it's too crazy. It's like, go down this path and get +5 to life. And then the next step will be +2.4 for light damage. And then the next one's heavy damage, or it's a stealth upgrade, or eventually a new ability will be in the center of one of those. And then it branches out to another constellation. It's kind of cool in its way, but it's really overwhelming as a as a UI
element.
Yeah, I don't
even pay attention to it. I just try to get the big ones.
Yeah.
And it obscures what you're working towards. Like, that was something that I'm sure you can go online and find it. It's not hard to put in the effort to figure it out. But one thing that Odyssey had was you could look at the skill tree and go, okay, if I skill here, it's going to lead to these abilities and I'm going to be able to play this way. And so I'm going to pick this. With this, I was definitely going down the path, and I was starting down the path of the Raven, because again, I was like, oh, sneaky. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden I got to where the branch kind of connects to one of the others, and you see an ability that's for both. I was like, oh, well, that's the kind of ability I want. So then I started putting points in the wolf skill tree. And then all of a sudden I saw one up in the top tree, and I was like, oh, well, that's an ability I want too. And so now I'm just kind of making my way around this web instead of going down one. And there's really been no logic to it. You can respec at any time, so it's not like they punish you for it. It's not like my gameplay is going to suffer if I end up feeling like, oh, whoops, I really messed it up.
Right.
So you don't have to worry about it. But there is something to be said when you can actually see the thing and plan what you want to do, rather than this kind of mystery of, oh, unlock another constellation, what will it be? Though that is satisfying to get the surprise.
Yeah, there. I guess what I'm saying is I'm not that grumpy about it. I just know that at first glance, it's going to be like, oh my gosh, look at this thing. It's like a spider web. But once you kind of get the hang of where you're going, and Bo even said it, I just know what big things he wants in the middle. Well, if you know that by hovering over it, then your focus becomes, well, I just got to go down that path and spend the points till I get there. And that's great. Yeah. That's a great way to do it. I really like some of the systems that they brought back that we haven't seen in a long time. For example, on the stealth side, are blending in with crowds, sitting on a bench and being incognito, pulling your hood over, and that makes you suspicious but no longer recognizable immediately. Like, those things are back, and they haven't been there for three versions of this game. So I appreciate that stuff, but it is weird to say that about a game about Vikings who get in a longboat, come up to your camp, and beat the shit out of everything. And yeah, so I understand.
Exactly, an Assassin's Creed.
I get it. I get the disconnect there. I totally understand. But for some reason, I'm feeling more stealthy than ever and really enjoying that aspect of the game.
I think there's a lot of good stealth. You were right to say stealth opportunities. And I didn't know that maybe they'd moved away and came back. Like, I don't know any of that context. Sure. I just think I'm not interested in it, like, but maybe that's just, it's like, I get, you know, I want the fun of like being a Viking. There's no game like that. And I've watched on TV shows so much. And I know it's kind of morbid, like going to town and slaughter everyone and take all their stuff. It's horrible, really. Like, but that's the experience I'm getting. And sneaking around makes me feel like I'm not the strong Viking, you know what I mean? That I need to be. So I imagine once I get to harder zones, stealthing might become a little more required depending on what happens. But so far in the starter zones, it's murder, she wrote.
It's funny you mention that, because I had one of my frustrations, and I want to say, because I was a little early in the game when we last talked about it, so I have a lot of stuff that I've clarified as I've gotten to spend more time with it. But one of the things that did really bug me was, you know, you're a Viking, you're raiding and pillaging. You're not really a hero. You're a hero for the Vikings, but you're not a hero for the world. And so we charge in and you blow the horn and you see the crowds of people going, they're running away. And I took out my bow and I shot one of the people that was running away in the back, because it felt like the Viking thing to do. Yeah. And the game's like, hey, you keep killing innocent people, we're going to desync. And I was like, the hell, I'm a Viking. I'm raiding and pillaging and stealing crap, and like, you're gonna really dock me because I shot guy that was running
but
away.
See, that is your impression of what you see as Vikings, but culturally speaking, if you really look at it, and I haven't looked at it that much, but they're not there's honor in those ranks. They're not there to kill innocents. And so the idea is you kill foes.
No, they are. They are.
I'm just saying.
I think that guy had a knife.
But you can't base everything on that Viking show. Like, that Viking show is cool.
I mean, they're not completely homicidal maniacs. Like, they have ethics, but, you know, they did bring back slaves. Like, slavery is a thing, and indentured servitude was a thing. Like, that's just where the rubber meets the road on this history stuff, right? If we're making a historically accurate simulation of terrible stuff, then I get why they don't go all the way, because, you know, it's a product and they want to sell it and they don't want to make people ask deep moral questions when they play games. Right. But I do. I like, that's the experience I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. And so I agree with John. I'm like, yeah, that's weird. And it's just weird. Mm-hmm. Like the games that they make are like history lessons. I'm pleased to see they still have that whole, you know, it's a well-researched game. They have little history lessons here and there about people. Like, I do get the sense that I'm like exploring an aspect that is well-researched. And even Assassin's Creed, I think at one point did like a demo version of their game that was like a historical demo.
Yeah, the last schools and stuff. Or not this, like, not the last one, but Origins had a complete combat-free walkthrough mode where you could just go and visit all the historical sites, and they used them in schools and stuff. It was really cool.
Yeah. You and know. So I really appreciate that about this. I wish more games actually did that. And, but yeah, it's gotta be an authentic experience. If you're doing the history lesson thing, you don't just ignore the not so great stuff in favor of the good stuff. But I get why you would do that for a video game, you know?
Right.
And you don't want your 10-year-old playing a game where they're literally learning how to raid and pillage and all the worst aspects of it. But right. It was awful. It was a hard time. And like, I think from that age, because we're talking about Dark Ages of Man, it's not like they're necessarily the good guys either. Like, everyone's shitty. Like, everyone at the time was shitty.
Yeah.
Like, you know, women, no rights. They're basically like cattle at, you know, in that age. Like, all kinds of bad things that we just don't even appreciate is part of that era. So I like that it would be authentic, mm-hmm. but you know,
yeah, anyways. But it's at the same time, I like that the characters are having to face the fact that they maybe have a bigger role to play than just be a dirty Viking or to be, you know, a Egyptian. Bayek was this. Oh, by the way, the Bayek actor, I loved him in that game, is the same Bayek guy that played Father on this show. Here. Look, Bo.
Oh, chest reveal.
Chest reveal. Soul. Look.
Isn't
that cool? Anyway, for the TV show Bayek? Raised by Wolves, the actor who played Father is Bayek. Anyway.
He was your main character for Origins.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And he was in Warcraft, the last expansion, as one of the main troll guys. Anyway,
I love that guy. That guy's amazing.
He's great. But anyway, the point is, what was my point with that? My point is, I don't have a point. There's no point.
Well, I want to talk about, because I was a little harsh on Lady Ivor.
John's like, screw your point.
Yeah, moving on. He can't remember it. We're moving. I was a little harsh on Lady Ivor last week.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And I want to kind of take some of that back, because I've now been playing as her for a while. I stand by elements of it. Early Ivor is a little hard to deal with. She's a little self-serious, grumbly, muttery, like, wasn't feeling it. And even when I went back and played through some of it again, I still wasn't feeling it. But pretty early on, she kind of comes into her own. And the way I described it to you guys when we were chatting about it, separately, and I think it's actually a pretty decent analogy, is, you know, we talked a lot about like, oh, she's no Cassandra. But I feel like Odyssey is like playing a game starring Han Solo, right? And Valhalla is playing a game starring Luke Skywalker. They are completely different characters. They are telling a completely different story. Of course, they're not going to be comparable. Like, if you put Han Solo in the role that Luke was in Star Wars, it's not going to, his demeanor and attitude isn't going to fit, and vice versa. And for the game that Valhalla is, I think Ivor's performance is good. Sure. And I think it actually does come around, and I really ended up liking it. A lot on its own merits. It is very different from Cassandra. She's still one of my favorite characters ever in the game, but Odyssey is a completely different game than Valhalla. Right. And that's that's kind of the hurdle that I had to get over first. Was it's very easy to get in there and see all these similar systems and controls and all of that and go, oh, right, like Odyssey, and immediately start making one-to-one comparisons. But like what Bo said is this is a game where you're playing a Viking and you're telling a very different story than someone who is essentially you're telling a Greek myth mm-hmm. in Odyssey. And, you know, in that game, you are the kind of character that saunters up to people, hands on hips, and is larger than life. Like, that's, yeah, I mean, that's it was the a time kind of character of en- that is.
It was yeah. a time of enlightenment, too, and freedom. Whereas, like, this is the Dark Ages. This is a time of horror.
yeah.
Religious horror, murdering horror, all kinds of horror, all the horror.
So, yeah. Yeah.
It's, so I just wanted to backpedal on that a little bit. I think she's great. I think there are a lot of great character moments and a lot of humor in that, which is what I kind of found lacking initially. Mm-hmm. And then I started to find it, whether it's a dude with an axe in his head, which was like the saddest, funniest thing I encountered, or probably the most I laughed at a dumb visual gag, which was a fleeting battle with a guy who was doing it from outside of a hut, and then when you mm-hmm. beat him, you just see a man clearly running away over a hill after he's defeated, and I thought it was the funniest visual gag I've seen in a long time. It was amazing. So that game definitely finds that dumb Assassin's Creed humor in the right kinds of places and has some really good memorable moments.
Yeah, also, I agree.
The mini games are great.
The only problem with Lady Ivor is that she can't grow a 2-foot red beard and look like a badass beard guy. And so, sorry, I like the guy better because of that. He looks like a beard. He looks like a cool guy because he has a giant beard. I'm just going to put it.
Yeah, I got nothing against the guy. Just, you know, Lady Ivor. I'd marry her.
Yeah.
That's a strong contender.
Yeah, I think we know Bo's type. But yeah, there. I also, one thing we haven't mentioned, and I just think it's a really nice touch to the game, and one that they really didn't have to do, they put in like a full transmog, dress your character up, barbershop, get new tattoos system in the game. And I think that's great that they, the game sort of acknowledges that, yeah, players are really into cosmetics in video games. Turns out we were really into that. That's the thing we like. And it really adds to the variety of the game. So you go to your tattoo guy, and he not only gives you a bunch of tattoo options, but hairstyles, beard cuts, freaking length of hair, color of everything, what color he is, all that kind of customization you can just do anytime. It doesn't cost you anything to do it. And so if I want to go look like a total, you know, I don't know, look like I'm wearing a bear, I can do it because I unlocked all that gear. Now I can just go transmog into that gear. It's very cool. So those kinds of systems I really appreciate. Anyway, the game's rad. I'm loving it. I can't get enough.
Skull!
Yeah. It's very good. Something happened that was really funny the other day. Oh, I may have captured it, so I'll remember when
I better say it quick before John moves on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can't remember it. We're moving on, Scott.
Okay. No, this is good. You're like that guy that recognizes when someone's going to fall off the edge and you go, all right, we're back. We're back, everybody. We're back. What else? I played a lot of Shadowlands as well. Not a lot. I'm only 52 levels in. So 2 levels in to the expansion. I'm still in Bastion. I haven't had a ton of time for it, unfortunately. But I am also taking my time. I'm in no rush to rip through this stuff. I feel like I learned a lesson in the last expansion to not burn out too quickly because I really burned out early on BFA and I don't want to do that here. So I'm taking my time, paying attention to the story, enjoying what I'm seeing. The weird bit about Shadowlands, I'll go into this more on Friday's The Instance, but I went in there with GURP because I have a GURP first rule typically and always level him first. But I got to level 51 with him and went, why am I craving the druid? What is about this world that I want the druid? I want the druid for some reason. So I went back out, grabbed the druid, ran that whole initial thing and got him into Bastion. And now that's what I'm maining. I'm taking the druid first. It's just happening.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So my troll druid named Gerblefleek is going all the way to the end.
Gerblefleek.
Yeah, it's a stupid name. What can I tell you? But
I didn't say that.
It's that game's very pretty. I really like what they're doing with story so far. It's a very nice, like often is the case with new expansions. WoW expansions have great introductory stuff, great leveling experience. I'm enjoying all that stuff immensely so far. John, how's it gone for you in there?
It's gone pretty good. I also feel like I'm not racing through it, but I did get through Bastion and Maldraxxus, and I'm kind of just dipping my toes into Ardenweald. And it's beautiful. Like, that's the thing. It's probably the most I've cared about world building in a WoW game since Pandaria. Like, I'm actually interested in finding out how all this works.
Right.
Which turns out is kind of awful at times. Like, it's kind of shocking. Like, you go into these afterlives and you find out, you know, how the system runs there, and you go, oh, this place may look like heaven, but this place might actually super suck. And, oh, this place might look like a heavy metal rock nightmare, but this might also be awful. But, you know, hey, it's awful in a completely different way than the other place. Mm. But it's good. I think there's a couple things that I wish were done differently, but overall, I'm having a really good time with it. I think my favorite thing is a lot of people point to Legion and say it's one of their favorite expansions. It's definitely one of mine. And one of the reasons for that is it focused on the class. And I think whenever you lean into the class for a character, you're going to get good results, because that's how players identify with the world is, you know, I chose to be this. So when you treat me as that, it's going to feel better. And there was a quest pretty early on in the intro where Anduin tells you he wants you to go free a bunch of souls that are locked up. And he says, so go kill their captors, get keys, and free these souls. And just as a joke, because I was streaming it, I went up to the cage door and went, now, as a rogue, I should probably be able to pick this lock. And I clicked pick lock and clicked the cage, and it started picking the lock, and I freed it without getting a key.
Oh.
And I went, what is going on?
That's cool.
And it turns out that has worked through the entire expansion. Anytime something has been locked, unless it's some magic special key, I have been able to pick the lock and do what a rogue should be able to do for that. And that is an incredibly cool feeling, that it's such a small detail, but it just changes how you feel about the game. And it made the game that much more exciting for me. And so it's almost like getting a little bit of Legion back, even though it's not, you know, a major thing. And my understanding is there's lots of elements like that. If you play a Death Knight, instead of just calling you champion, they call you Death Lord because you got promoted to that position.
Oh,
in
that's
Legion.
Cool. Yeah.
So there's a lot of little touches like that throughout the game. And I just think that stuff's cool. I the only moment I've had in WoW that was like that, where I was like, oh my gosh, this is an RPG like D&D, is there was a instance where during the course of a fight with a boss, he would run over and drink a potion and become super powerful.
Yeah.
And I could see because we wiped on the boss, I could see that you could click the potion. So I was like, well, I wonder what you can do with it. And before we pulled him the second time, I stealthed over to the potion and I clicked it. And as a rogue, I was able to poison the potion. And so then in the middle of this boss fight, he runs over and drinks the potion and then just died.
That's great.
And we skipped the entire second phase. And that blew my mind. And that was probably one of the coolest moments I've ever had in WoW. And just anytime they lean into that sort of class fantasy, they're going to win me over. And they definitely have moments like that in this.
Was that Professor Putricide? Was that the dude that drank the thing?
No, I can't remember his name. It was in one of the Legion, like the Suramar or whatever dungeons.
Oh, okay. That's super. I didn't know about that either. That's really cool. Yeah, I like little stuff like that. I think, you know, it's easy to look at the game. I enter a new space. I get a couple of quests. And it's go kill five of these, please, and come back with their essence. And then go find this one sort of boss type dude and kill him and then bring me his head. Like, if you're hearing me say that and you're going, oh, so like WoW forever? Yeah, there's a lot of that, and it's always going to be that. Like, I don't know how you do anything different. That's at the core of this game mechanically. from the questing perspective anyway, that is what this game is. And there's part of me that's like, well, you know, 15 years of that, it's a long time to be doing that. But I do think they're packaging it nicely. Like there feels like, you know, some people complain actually that there's so much of this that's like story and then the cutscene and then story, and then you go do a thing mechanically, but then you get more story and stuff. But I think I'm kind of down with the way they do it and the way they package it, because it is more interesting than if it was just a bunch of quests and I had to grind them out. So overall, I'm impressed so far. I like it. Also, props to the team for a pretty flawless launch. I know there was some trouble logging in early on. That's always true, but I had no problem getting in about 45 minutes after servers went live and stayed in the whole time. I've yet to be in a queue.
I wasn't so lucky.
Yeah, you had problems, right? I heard something about that.
I did. I was streaming, and turns out I didn't check my stream before I started. There were streaming issues. I had to restart WoW, and getting back in was a problem. Like, right, being in before it launched, smooth, just started right up, no problems. And then once I had to log out and log back in, I was down for about an hour.
But yeah. See, that sucks. So there were, you know, it wasn't perfect, but I think for a launch of a major expansion with, according to their earnings call, record pre-orders, like pretty smooth worldwide simultaneous launch. That's hard to do. And I feel like they did a pretty good job of it. So
I'm one of the more, still the most popular online gaming experiences.
Oh yeah.
It's like, not like a, it's no slouch.
No, it's still the standard when it comes to, you know, MMOs. The closest thing to them competition wise these days is Final Fantasy, and their numbers aren't this big. So, you know,
I think there are more people checking out WoW at launch than anything Final Fantasy's doing at their launch.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Even if the player base over a long term is lower, that initial rush is going to be huge.
Yeah. Those guys did a cool tweet. The Final Fantasy 14 people did a...
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, I like cool. That kind of stuff.
So a question for you guys, because I'm super on the fence. You know, I'm a little bit like, it's a big time commitment. I got a lot of things I want to do. It's probably a good idea to not play it, but it looks really cool. And I'm hearing a lot of, you know, mostly positive things. It's just, I'm really stuck on this.
What I think would really jive with you is... So much of this reminds me of some of your DM ideas, and some of the stuff you've worked with, like Afterlife stuff in our campaign on There Will Be Dungeons, is based on the actual D&D Afterlife stuff. So I understand that, you know, you're sort of just riffing with some of it, but the way that you pulled us through that part of our campaign reminds me a lot of these ideas.
Oh, well, specifically it's, Planescape is very, I think, the first time in like role-playing history where you have something so simultaneously it's the afterlife, but also it's this weird city where people hang out after, like,
yeah, it's not
just heaven and hell. It's like, it's like real. It's a big political mess, and there's a whole bunch of factions, and there's good parts of town, shitty parts of town. So I imagine there's probably a hub like that in this game.
Totally. Right?
There's a lot of stuff like that. I mean, you get into it where it's like, okay, well, the first place you go is Bastion, and you've got this idea of, okay, well, these are people who were good and noble souls, and this is their reward, which is to have their identity and life completely stripped from them. And then they guide people into the afterlife, and that's somehow supposed to be a reward. And you have the strife that causes people who aren't ready to let go. Whereas then you go to Maldraxxus, and you've got people who they know exactly who they are, who they were, but their job, and this is kind of an interesting concept, is to defend the other afterlives. Because in addition to it being the realm of death, it's still a place that you can go. I mean, you're there as a mortal anyway, so it's a place you can go to and visit. So the afterlife needs an army, and that's what this afterlife provides, is soldiers and troops to defend the afterlife for it. And so as you kind of learn these concepts, you're like, oh, this is kind of neat. This is cool. This is an interesting idea.
You can tell these guys are major tabletop players. The writers of this thing, you can tell that they've got some concepts they've lifted from other ideas. But like Erebos is one of my favorite parts of what the introductory thing is. It's your main city. It's kind of your Dalaran this time around. You got all the, you know, there's like a whole quarter for, professions, and you know, they it's interesting, the conceit on how there's professions in this like purgatory heaven state is kind of funny, I thought. But anyway,
Okay. Well, everyone in the chat room is telling me not to play it because I'm too. I'm also have addictive tendencies. So, you know, if I'm in for a pound, in for a dollar, like I'll be on a 36-hour gaming session.
Yeah. Right. It is more World of Warcraft, Bo. Like, honestly, like that sounds very reductive, but it has a cool story. It has cool worlds, but it is more World of Warcraft. Yeah. If you want more of that, it's going to be very good. And I think you're going to like it. You're not going to be bored with it like you might have been with a expansion that didn't interest you as much.
It was a reputation. Somebody sent me a picture of a reputation bar. That'll turn me off.
Well, all that stuff kicks up at the end. And that tends to be where my understanding is you typically bounce anyway, is at the end. Like,
I like, you know, rating.
If you just want to check out the worlds, it might be worth getting in there, but it's going to be World of Warcraft. Like, there's nothing about this expansion that goes, well, this is a game changer. Like, it's very good. It's very cool. It's very interesting, but it's more WoW.
Yeah.
That trailer's so awesome, though.
Oh, it's very cool.
I have a history with the game, so it's like there's a lot of pulls, but yeah, okay. I'll just watch.
Here's what I would do.
I'll watch you guys play.
I would say don't do it yet. I would play Valhalla till you're done with Vikings, and then maybe look and see what you're doing then. And then you can probably be playing Cyberpunk, and it won't matter anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I would want to hear is the review of Torghast from you guys.
Oh, right.
That's going to be the, if you're like, this is a crazy good experience, then I'd be like, well, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah,
Torghast. Over the Christmas holidays.
Torghast is the number one thing I care about post, you know, as an end game thing. And if they nail it, we're in happy times. If not, well.
Yeah, me too.
We'll see how it goes. All right. That's it. Oh, Bo, you played something else. Oh, Baldur's Gate. How'd that go? Stuff. How'd Baldur's Gate go?
Baldur's Gate. My computer is a potato now, basically. I can play a little bit of the tutorial level. By the way, the tutorial level's awesome. You're on a Mind Flayer ship. It's like the greatest thing ever. It's not some weird island that's boring. It's like you're literally in hell on a Mind Flayer ship, and it's the greatest thing ever. They're nailing it. The problem is my computer's just too crappy for it, and it's not on GeForce Now, so I can't play it. It wouldn't load past a certain point. It would crash. I don't know if that's beta or it was definitely low frame rate on my PC, so I'm going to give it a bit of time. Definitely super good so far, but just running like poo, so I kind of regret spending the $80, but I think I'll still be playing it before it makes it to launch. The other thing I wanted to tell you guys was there's this hilarious thing in the character creator. There's a secret panel. As you're making your character, it's got lots of options, very fun, Larian style. And then you pick your ideal partner for your character.
Yeah.
And it just feels weird. It's like a secret thing. It's not there. I just accidentally clicked over and I'm like, oh, make your perfect partner. And I was like, I mean, I was streaming it, so I was like, I don't know, this is a little personal. I don't want to do this live on stream.
I mean, you mean you're picking
not a personal. Wife. Yeah, it's just like it's like, cause you know how you might have romance options, they're always like, you know, a few options, and you like, okay, this character's cool. Like in Valhalla, that Petra girl really wants to, like, you know, hang out with me. We did shrooms together and followed an elk around the forest, and that was awesome. And now she's like, you know, if you get lonely, come on over. And I'm like, okay. But in this game, it's like design your perfect woman or man. And I'm like, I just kind of want to meet the people and like dig, find someone I like real life. I don't want to actually make my robot girlfriend in this game. So I was like, I hope they take that out because it feels weird. And I didn't like it.
Well, it's also, but, is there any precedence for that in the old games or in D&D in general to do that?
Maybe they're going to do something where it's like something appears, like you got to fight a succubus, so they're going to appear as whatever your idea of perfection is. I don't know. I don't know if it's worth the level of effort it seems to be asking for that sort of mechanic. That is kind of weird.
We'll get
it's a full character creation. Pick the perfect eyebrows, the eyes. Yeah, you know,
I'm kind of with you. That's kind of odd.
Yeah, it's a little bit weird. But that looks the actual tools for that, like the character creation stuff, looks rad. Looks really good.
Yeah, it's really good. It just didn't work the best on my system, so that's a bummer. But I can tell it's going to be really good when I get the system for it. And all the like the Larianification of some of the D&D rules, it's fine. It's a video game. Yeah. it's close enough and it's really robust. There's a ton of spells in it. Yeah. Anyways, music's also super good. So this game is going to be a winner. I can feel it. And I'm really excited.
Good. I want to hear more about it. No,
I did want to say one more thing in my like little section here too, is that first of all, Ubisoft Connect, you were right, Scott. Like it's a great service.
Yeah.
I just wanted to play Valhalla, but I'm like now planning all 15 games I'm going to play after. Mm-hmm. Like that same Xbox excitement I'm getting from Ubisoft Connect. I actually really recommend it. There's a great library of games in there that I haven't played. So, and I've been playing Valhalla over GeForce Now. I finally have a use case because Valhalla is a next gen game and I'm playing it on low and it runs streaming. It runs less. I'm playing on ultra turbo graphics, and I can report, I think I've done about 20 to 30 hours on GeForce Now. And apart from the fact that the quality will go down sometimes, like it won't be perfect 1080p. It kind of fuzzes the way Netflix does sometimes
it's like a little artifact thing or whatever.
Sure. Apart from that, I'm playing on full like ray tracing business. I'm playing the most beautiful game I've ever played on my PC, thanks to GeForce Now. I can stream it no problem. I'm not redlining on anything. And the game is, there's never, you know, the jokes were like, you press the space bar and the jump happens 2 seconds. There's been never, not a single time that I've played that the controller was not responsive. And I've tried it, but I was really skeptical. And so now that I've given it a full 20, 30 hour, like, stress test, this is the future. And I just want to confirm that, like, buying games will be a thing of the past that I think will be better for it.
Yeah, I tend to agree, and that service is a good showcase of that. And I also, the Ubisoft Connect will also be responsible for the cross-save stuff, which is why I'm so tempted to get it on the Xbox as well, so I can play it anytime I want, wherever I want. What a dumb idea. Why would I spend another $59 on the game I already own? But I'm tempted.
I'm tempted too. Hey, you know, sometimes you want to be in different rooms.
I know, but what a highfalutin idea that is. Like,
yeah, you spent $70 to gain an additional room.
Yeah, I don't know that I need to do that. But at the same time, I could justify it and say, well, this is for work. It's for science. You know, I want to see how this works so I can get on the show and go, oh, yeah, it totally did my saves. And now we know, so I can inform the public.
Do you think Ubisoft Connect could end up being on the Xbox platform? Sometimes they have other subservices.
Potentially. I mean, they are doing so. OK, so we didn't talk about it. I guess it was just last week. That's why we didn't. Or maybe it was a week before. But that Luna service on Amazon, which is kind of their answer to GeForce Now and Stadia and all that, they're aiming more for a Netflix model, which is they're going to have a bunch of games you can stream and you just pay whatever it is a month. They'll have a free tier and then a paid tier. But one of the things they announced is they're going to do like they do a TV. If you have Amazon Prime Video, you can add on services. So you can be like, oh, I really want HBO. So HBO can be added as an add-on. I want Showtime. That can be added as an add-on. Well, in this case, they're going to do it with gaming services. And the first one that was announced is Ubisoft. So for an extra, I guess it's just the flat, it's the same rate. It's like for $15, you get Ubisoft with your thing that you're doing with Amazon Luna. And so in theory, they could make a deal with Microsoft. I can't see why they wouldn't for xCloud. Why wouldn't they? Right. I mean, then
that makes Luna very appealing all of a sudden.
I agree. It does. And Luna has a free tier, but I don't know how it works. Also, I don't think it's full public yet. I think it's still by invite. I'm not sure, actually, about that.
Let's not underestimate Amazon. They're really trying to get their foot into the video game market, and I don't think they're going to give up because they have Twitch behind them, you know?
Yeah. So. Plus, this could be a way in, you know? A real way in for them, and not just them trying to force a MMO down our throat. Although that MMO has some pretty good buzz around it. So maybe that thing will be good. I don't know. Well, all right then. Good experiences all around in the world of video games. But now...
That's a good question.
We have an email to read. This is from Dominic, who wrote in to talktothecore@gmail.com. Yeah, that's right. talktothecore@gmail.com is the email address. You're encouraged to use it every time you want to. Every time you wanna, every time you wanna is the word I meant.
Every time.
Yep, I did a typo in the words I said. It's so dumb. Anyway, Dominic wrote in and says, hey guys, longtime listener, first time writing in. I just listened to the latest episode with John and Bo talking about Hades, and I was curious, this actually might be a little older, I was curious if any of you guys have heard of Chronicon, It is a recently new game that is on Steam. It is a top-down, isometric, Diablo-like game that I think you guys would absolutely enjoy. Has anyone here heard of it? Because I went and looked it up.
No.
Okay. So, Chronicron. Oh, I don't have the link here. Hold on. I meant to put it in the notes. I own this game. And it is like a 2D... how do I explain this? It's like a top-down 2D thing. I got it when it was in early access, and I honestly haven't checked it in a while, so I don't know how it looks now. I guess it's in full release. But it played just like Diablo. Like, the loot grind felt the same. The levels being randomly generated, the kind of people you would fight, the way you'd build out your character classes, warping around the world once you'd unlock their little warp things and all that. Very, very Diablo, but done in the style of, like, a 16-bit Zelda game or something, but dark.
Yeah, like so I'm looking at the trailer. It doesn't look super impressive, but I see overwhelmingly positive on the store, and that's not nothing.
Yeah, people love it.
Yeah, so
I liked it. It was fun. It's all the gameplay elements are there. It's just presented in a way that at first glance on a static screen, you'd be like, oh, well, that looks like, you know, another 16-bit indie, big shocker. But apparently these guys are like, incredibly
if it's the real deal, and I imagine it, because it's Diablo, there's a lot of variety with equipment, gear, spells, abilities, all that stuff, and if it's fun to do those things, then it's Diablo.
Well, here's the game features: 5 large and varied acts, each with their own storyline and play through, 4 unique classes, the Templar, Berserker, Warden, and Warlock, procedurally generated dungeons and areas, each playthrough is different. Local co-op with 4 players, same machine requires 1 Xbox. They just made that. Remote play together, fully supported. 400 unique plus items with designed special powers. Over 700 items with randomized enchants and qualities. Build changing powers and powerful set items. Over 900 skills, abilities, and perks to learn and improve. I mean, that's a deep game.
And it even said the first review I see here is the trailer on the Steam page doesn't do this game justice. It's extremely well-crafted ARPG.
Yeah, people like it. So I own this. I need to dust it off. It's been a while. It was in early access.
And it's only like $12.
Yeah, it's cheap. $11.99 or $11.19 on Steam right now. So check it out.
Well, also, color me curious. Thanks for the recommendation, man.
If my memory serves, it had a really cool soundtrack as well. I think I remember that. And it also gets really frantic like Diablo, like big explosions and skeleton bones flying everywhere and, you know... They figured out a way.
Your ability's going nuts too.
Yeah, and for being that cheap, it seems like a no-brainer. Anyway, thanks for the recommendation. We appreciate it, Dominic. And that is gonna do it for the show. If you guys stick around, we're gonna play some junk box. What am I trying to say? Jackbox games with our friends Kyle and Kristen of TWBD fame, and of course other things. So if you want to stick around and watch that, you're welcome to. We're gonna stream it. So that'll be right after this. All right, Bo, before we go, do you have any words of wisdom for the people at home?
Always bring your axes to a Viking raid.
Oh, perfect.
Bo, don't forget them at home.
Okay, there you go. John, anything from you?
If you find yourself in Valhalla, do whatever you want. Right. But it turns out rules very limited around Vikings. You don't need me to tell you what to do.
Fantastic. I only have one piece of advice to give, and that is to support us at patreon.com/coreshow. There are many benefits to doing so. Primary among them is supporting your favorite video game podcast. So go show your love at patreon.com/TMS. Frogpants.com/TMS. TMS? Sorry. Patreon.com/coreshow. Frogpants.com/core. I forget what show I'm on for a minute. We're at CorePod on Twitter, John_Jagger, Scott Johnson, and Bo Schwartz. You can follow us all. We can hang out there as well. Thank you all very much, and we'll see you next time.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes, get more at frogpants.com.